This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 7.06 a.m. on Wednesday, the 25th of May. The skies look rather gloomy and overcast from our vantage point here in Tamantun, Dr. Ismail. If you're on the road, drive safe. We are The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Kusu Chuang and Tan Chen Li. As we always do at the top of the morning, let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
In the U.S., Dow up 0.2%, S&P 500 down 0.8%, as NASDAQ down 2.4%. Asian markets, a lot of downs. Nikkei down 0.9%, Hang Seng down 1.8%, Shanghai Composite down 2.4%, STI down 0.6%, and FBM KLCI down 0.7%.
So a rather red board in front of us. I think the NASDAQ was down, especially after Snap gave its warnings on earnings guidance moving forward, projecting lower than expected earnings perhaps for the coming quarters. But for some thoughts on where international markets are heading, we have on the line with us Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda. Jeff, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us today. Now, some CEOs are seeing the equities route, especially in tech stocks, as having already reached peak sell-off, with the worst being over. I mean, do you agree with this, or is the bottom still some way off?
I think it's more of the latter. The natural inclination for CEOs of companies would be to say that the worst is over. So we need to understand where those comments are coming from and the interest that they represent. So we still haven't even really seen the Federal Reserve start hiking rates yet. And also they're going to start quantitatively easing as well. They're going to start selling down their balance sheet. So monetary conditions are still going to tighten. And I believe that there's still more pain to go. In a stagflationary environment, that's always a challenging environment for stock markets anyway.
Yeah, Jeff, the Fed is also encountering huge slowdowns all over the economy. And the latest one is the flash PMI readings, construction activity, of course, showing a sharp deceleration, activities at a three-month low. What kind of conclusions do you think the Fed is going to draw from these, and of course, the decisions that they're going to make from this data?
I think they'll likely feel that their guidance, shall we say, is having an impact. We saw the PMIs in Europe and also the US ease slightly overnight, but new home sales fell off the side of a cliff. The market's already priced in a lot of tightening, so we've already seen mortgage rates, for example, around the world shoot much, much higher, and I suspect that that is having the more immediate impact. And that monetary policy itself will have to play catch-up. What I'm not seeing and what the Fed won't be seeing is a huge or a very notable downturn in inflation. Inflation is starting to slow, that rate of increase, but it's not turning down, and that's what they're trying to achieve. So I don't think it's going to be enough to make them pause with their guidance or their intentions. And this is a challenge that a lot of parts of the world are going to have to deal with, slowing growth, but persistently high inflation.
Yeah, Jeff, the money is leaving risky assets at a frightening pace, and one of the havens has been the U.S. dollar. I just want to talk about the U.S. dollar versus the euro. It's 107 right now, and people are discussing maybe even parity. What are your views on that front in terms of the flows to the greenback?
That was certainly my view as well until a couple of days ago when Christine Lagarde came out with that blog post and said that the ECB will start hiking basically from next month and bring policy rates back to zero and also run off their latest quantitative easing package in September as scheduled. I think it suggests that the market was extremely short euros versus the US dollars. Right up until that moment that Ms. Lagarde put that post out, and that's what we're seeing, a huge short squeeze. I think there's still a lot of challenges ahead for Europe, not least because they're going to have to raise interest rates as well for the first time in probably about 12 years, while also dealing with the downstream effects and impacts of the Ukraine conflict as well in Eastern Europe. So I think that euro's more than likely still a sell on rallies towards that sort of 108, 110 level. And the balance of risks still says that it is going to head back towards parity.
Let's talk about social media industry for a little bit here. So after Snap's warning that the company would not be meeting its earnings guidance, how bleak is the outlook for the social media industry as a whole? And do you see a spillover effect on the share valuations for Meta, Twitter, and Pinterest perhaps?
Well, we saw this led off by Facebook, or as we want to call it now, Meta, earlier in the year, when it also gave revised downward guidance, and its shares got absolutely crushed, and they've stayed pretty offered since. And this is a pattern we've seen in social media companies. So I think there are still more challenges ahead, particularly if growth of users slows. We have to remember that there's been some incredible growth built into the pricing of a lot of these social media and other technology stocks over the last 2 years, thanks to the flood of money at 0% from central banks around the world that has pushed into asset price inflation, one of the huge biggest beneficiaries being technology stocks. So there's still potentially more pain from very rich valuations in tech if they don't meet those very lofty and ambitious goals.
Yeah, of course, when you talk about goals and lofty, you know, personalities, Cathie Wood's ARK Investments, she's been quite notable for, you know, trying to talk up Zoom's share price. Zoom has also, you know, zoomed in the wrong direction. At one point in time, Jeff, do you think that the bottom of the tech ecosystem is being witnessed at this point in time?
Yeah, it's usually via a capitulation trade where we start having sort of the markets fall by 20 or 30% in a week. We've seen that in the global financial crisis. We've seen it also at the start of March 2020, if you cast your eyes back to the price action in March 2020. It's the maximum pain, the maximum fear. That's usually when we start seeing a bottom. I'm not quite sure if we've come to that yet. It's been a fairly orderly retreat so far.
And can we turn our attentions to what's happening in China, Jeff? China is rolling out a raft of measures to stimulate the economy, from tax rebates to issuing bonds. How successful will these measures be as long as the government still intends to continue with their COVID zero policy, do you think?
And yeah, this is one other thing that we really hadn't touched on so far this morning, but I believe that the China slowdown is also having an impact on equity markets around the world as well. Look, they're very much focused on trying to stimulate the economy via fiscal transfers, i.e. the government making money available in a very targeted manner to certain sectors of the economy. They don't want to go down the path of what they've done in the past, where they just open the monetary policy tap, cut rates, and then they've caused higher leverage and asset price inflation in the economy. I think it's a bit of a nil-all game at the moment. They're sort of playing with the edges, China, to keep the lights on, but it's being offset, obviously, by these COVID zero policies. So I think there's still negative risk for China because of that. And really what they're doing now is trying to have their cake and eat it. And I'm not sure if they're going to achieve that.
Yeah, just in terms of the impact to the financial markets in Asia, Joe Biden was actually in the region and he's been there. Well, he's still here for at least the next few days. What kind of messages do you think he wants to send to, you know, Asia and Asian markets in general?
Well, I think he wants to re-engage with Asia. I think Asia, many parts of Asia and the United States that have drifted apart, particularly after during the Trump presidency, etc. Also, the refusal of the US to engage in what was the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other trade agreements. I think it's disappointed Asia, which obviously wants to trade with each other and lift everybody's net wealth. The US has come down here with a lot of noise about containing China and defence, and depending on your point of view, that's great, but they've been extremely light on what they're going to try and achieve economically as far as engagement with the region goes. So I don't think it's going to be a great trip or a very successful trip for Joe Biden, because he's not really changed the dynamic between the US and Asia, so to speak. I think they really do need to re-engage economically and get back to their roots rather than having a protectionist Congress in order for Asia and US relations to deepen more.
Indonesia's central bank held off raising rates, but tightened the reserve requirement for lenders. Can you break down what that entails and the reasons for why Bank Indonesia is now choosing to take liquidity out of the system?
Yeah, when you look at the small print there, it says that if banks lend to micro and small medium enterprises, then that RRR rise doesn't apply. So what they're trying to not too subtly do is encourage the banking system to make loans and finance available to small, medium and micro enterprises to grow that part of the economy. They don't want them lending to necessarily government, you know, state-owned enterprises or huge conglomerates who already have access to plenty of wholesale funding anyway. So it's sort of a less than subtle way of encouraging the banking sector to target their lending to a certain spot. So in the RRR rate increase does withdraw liquidity on the face of it, but there's a bit of nudging behind the scenes, a sort of a carrot and the stick. Inflation's still reasonably benign. It's not as benign as Malaysia. So Barry Rajojo didn't feel the need to hike rates. Also, Indonesia's doing very well with the commodity boom as well. Current account's very strong. So there's no real selling pressure on the Indonesian rupiah because it refuses to hike rates. So in that context, I think Indonesia's in a good place at the moment, and they're really only going to move towards aggressively tightening when the Indonesian rupiah starts coming under pressure.
All right, Jeff, thanks very much for your comments this morning. That was Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Oanda, giving his take on some of the trends that he sees moving markets in the weeks and months to come. It's 7:18 in the morning. We're heading into some messages, and when we come back, we'll discuss, should the government bail out GLCs? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.